Good evening. You are listening to Raven Radio, KCAW, Sitka. It's 6:30 p.m. Today's Tuesday, September 17th. I'm Catherine Rose. I'm broadcasting live tonight from the Cable House, and you are listening to Raven Radio's live mayoral and assembly candidate forums. Right now, candidates Leah Mason and Steven Eisenbeist are with me. They are running for the mayor's chair. That is a two-year term. And we have a little less than, we have just a little over half an hour in this program before we switch over to our assembly candidates who are going to be with us at 7:15. So I just want to go ahead and get us started as quickly as possible. Welcome to both of you.
Hi.
Yeah, thank you.
And, you know, your responses to each question will be limited to 2 minutes, and we have quite a few listener questions tonight. And this is a forum. It's not a debate. It's a chance to compare your views and opinions on the city and let voters know where you stand. Of course, that being said, your time is your own. You're welcome to use it how you'd like. If you want to address another candidate's stance on an issue, you're welcome to do so. So right now, listeners, this is your chance to ask the mayoral candidates your questions. If you have a question, you can call us right now at 747-5879, or you can email news@kcaw.org. And news director Robert Woolsey is here, ready to take your call or your email, and he'll be bringing those questions into me in the air room. So let's get started. We're going to kick it off with Leah Mason. If you could go ahead and share your opening statements with us.
Thank you for having me. And I guess introducing myself may be the best way to do that. I am a Sitkan of about 10 years standing, and I know for most people that is practically an eye blink, but I have had some time to settle in and see how things work, so I'm not a complete newbie. I have spent time in Australia, and I have spent time now dealing with two different election kind of cycles going on at once. So it's really interesting for me to be in the midst of it all now. I haven't run for public office before, and people will get a much bigger picture from the questionnaire that Raven has posted on its website. So anything you don't hear tonight, you can find out a little more about by looking at their election hub.
All right, Stephen, opening statement.
Well, welcome everybody. Thanks for joining us this evening, and thank you for the opportunity to be able to serve you again. I've been serving on the assembly now for almost 10 years, two terms as an assembly member and two terms as mayor now. Running again was not an easy decision for me. After a lengthy amount of time, I was kind of wondering what Tuesdays would be like to sit back with my family again. So it definitely wasn't an easy decision. However, there are a lot of things coming up in the very near future that I'm excited about. I'm excited about helping us manage our prosperity. For the first, I'd say, 6 or 7 years on the assembly, all we did was cut budgets, and now we have a unique opportunity to add back into budgets and bring back programs such as Parks and Rec that the community truthfully values. I want to help us navigate what I believe is the question of our generation, and that is tourism. What is the right level of tourism? What does a tourism look like for the community that can benefit the most with the least impact? So there's a lot of opportunities coming up. There's a lot of challenges coming up, and I think I'm uniquely situated to help us navigate those.
Well, I think that brings us into our next question, our first question of the evening. You know, we got quite a few questions about cruise tourism and the level of tourism. I think that is the big issue of the year and potentially of the next few years. And lots of different variations on this question. In our questionnaire, we asked you about an MOU. We asked you about a cap. And listeners, if you haven't checked out the questionnaire, you can go see the candidates' answers to those questions online at kcaw.org. I'm going to step back and give you kind of a broader question about tourism here, and this will go to Stephen first. So what is the right size for cruise tourism in Sitka, and how would you get us there?
I don't think that the right size has yet been determined. I believe 10,000 people a day is not the right size, and I believe 50 people a day is not the right size. So we're somewhere in between that. The Assembly had hoped to pass that question off to the Tourism Task Force. Unfortunately, they found it to be as difficult of a question as we all knew that it would be. A lot of varying opinions in the community. There are those who don't need the revenue from tourism to succeed, and there are others who do need it. And so when you ask those two different groups, they're going to have wildly different answers. I believe that my generation sees tourism as an opportunity in Sitka, and they want an opportunity to stay here and to live, to be able to raise their families. So, again, it's most definitely not 10,000 people a day, but it's a level higher than we had in the early 2000s of, 80,000 people a day. And I think that was fairly unanimous, or 80,000 people a year. I think that was fairly vocal in the community, where we actually went and lobbied for cruise ships to come. Now that they're here, we're kind of doing the opposite. We're working to shorten the season, which we were able to successfully do with Norwegian Cruise Lines. In the 26th season, they will no longer have early April and late October sailings. So working like that collaboratively with the industry can have benefits, and I think that's the direction we need to head once we figure out what the majority of the community is looking for in tourism. If I had to put a number on it, I hate to say an annual number, but I think about 6,000 people a day is what this town can manage. And I think that our tour operators and our excursion operators are getting to the point where we can. We see the food trucks, which I vastly love. I've spoken a lot about food trucks. We're gaining opportunities for visitors as the time goes on.
Thank you. And we're going to pass that question to Leah now. Would you like me to repeat the question?
Yes, please.
So the question is, what is the right size for cruise tourism in Sitka, and how would you get us there?
Okay, well, I disagree that there is no right size. And I think that the way that we can get to a good answer for that is to do the research. We have spent money mitigating impacts. We have said that there is no way to understand carrying capacity, but actually when you spend money mitigating impacts, that's an aspect of a capacity constraint. There are a lot of things you can do to measure that and to also measure what kind of impact this level of traffic through our town actually creates. But you have to want to know, and we have done very little to find out. In fact, we have suggested to ourselves that we find out, and we have not done it. So I think we are well able to arrive at a number, and that number is unlikely to be a huge number of days where the population is more than half, again, the group of people who live here. The place isn't designed for that kind of group of people through here. If we basically said, we're going to invite that many people here to be here every day for 85 days, it would be a different conversation. So I think that there is a lot that can be done to arrive at a reasonable and equitable estimate of what is the right size.
Thank you for your responses. And this leads me to another sort of cruise-related question. This is from Nancy. This is a listener question from Nancy. She asks, may we please have an ordinance banning idling? Why do we have to put up with unnecessary air pollution? I think that's a complaint that's been, lobbied at buses, high bus traffic. So I think that her question is, would you support an ordinance banning idling? And this will go to Leah first.
Okay, I am in favor of ordinances for some things. This one, I would probably work on an education campaign rather than an ordinance for. We've attempted to do this in one of our Climate Connections articles that appear weekly, basically, in the Sentinel. And the person who wrote the article drew upon the expertise of some people who apparently are a big part of car folklore in America, but I was none the wiser. But basically they said that, you know what, this whole thing about warming up your car, it's not a thing. You need to warm up your car for a couple of seconds. not minutes. And what you waste in terms of fuel is increasingly something people are going to want to think about as it approaches a higher and higher cost. So I probably wouldn't do an ordinance for this one, but I would certainly do a public education campaign.
All right, Stephen, this question goes to you next. Would you like me to repeat the question?
I'm all right, thank you. I think an ordinance would be a little bit difficult on this one, mainly due to the enforcement. Our police force is already busy enough, let alone we're driving around and writing tickets for idling. I do understand where the question comes from, though, and to that end, buses that sit at Centennial Hall are not allowed to idle while they're waiting. If they're moving up in line, that's one thing, but if they're sitting waiting for passengers, they've been instructed to turn off their motors. I would also be fearful of the negative repercussions of an ordinance like this in the wintertime. Cars do only need a couple seconds to warm up, but my windshield is often frozen in the winter, and I'd hate to see someone get in trouble for warming up their car, or a diesel truck for that matter, in the winter. So there's a lot more to it than I think just than preventing some idling, but I definitely understand where the question is going and the purpose of reducing emissions.
Thank you. And here's another question from a listener. This is from Janet, and this is sort of, you know, connected to the previous two questions in a way. So I'm going to go with this one next. Regional outreach to other Southeast communities has been talked about in relation to managing the impacts of the cruise industry. Do you see cooperation with other communities as important for other issues? So this will go to Stephen first.
I very certainly do. I think as a united Southeast voice, we can have an effect on our shipping rates. I think we can have an effect on the fuel prices. I think we can have an effect on how we manage garbage and how we ship out garbage. So undoubtedly, Southeast talking as one voice can be very strong. Just look at the Rail Belt, for instance. We understand the influence that the Rail Belt holds because they do speak with a united voice there. So I am excited anytime we have conversations about Southeast coming together. Perfect case in point, in just a week or so, I believe it is, I headed down to Ketchikan for Southeast Conference, which is a very unique opportunity for business leaders and government officials to get together to talk about issues. And I really like that because it does include business as well. So you have a much broader perspective and can gain a whole lot more perspective. I think that'll, thank you.
Okay. Leah, this question will go to you next.
I agree with Stephen. I think regional cooperation is incredibly important for a bunch of little towns who otherwise won't be able to get as much attention for the things that they need. But I also think that it would foster a greater resilience within the region on a whole lot of things. I think that one of the first things I'd like to do is really advocate for the Southeast to get on a serious lobbying campaign regarding ferry service. A lot of what we talk about in terms of cost of living was addressed in past years by having a reliable ferry service throughout the year. People can travel to Juneau to get food. People can travel to other towns, do social events and cultural events, school events, via a much more affordable mode of transport. And so that, along with the potential for us to develop a Southeast regional food distribution network, there are things we can grow in Sitka that can't be grown in Turnicky Springs and vice versa. With ferries in a much more frequent operation, we could be distributing that food amongst ourselves. There's a lot we can do if we work together, and I think that's an incredibly important thing for us to do more often.
Thank you. All right, the next question is about Sitka's waste collection program, and this one will go to Leah first. The question is from Toby. It's a listener question. She says, how could our waste collection program be enhanced? And she gives several examples: community composting, neighborhood collection, stricter rules on what's acceptable at the transfer station. So again, this will go to you first, Leah.
Okay. I think garbage is actually a really, really, really great point to talk about when it comes to reducing cost of living. And from my my background in research, generally we're looking at between 30% and 40% by weight for removing organics from the waste stream. Given that we pay to cart things in and then cart them out again, we have a huge challenge and also a huge opportunity to close the loop by bringing what we bring in and then taking as much of that out as we can here, but also by looking at what we choose not to bring in. So a lot of the decisions are being made regarding the cost of our garbage by our supermarkets. They are the people choosing the products, and I think it'd be very useful for us to have a conversation with them about the packaging that comes with that. We are paying to cart it in, and we're paying for it to go out. We need to be making better choices if we want to reduce our costs, and we need to talk to our supermarkets about that. But as a gardener, amongst gardeners, we're also paying to bring a whole bunch of soil enhancements in, which we don't need to, if we are taking the organic materials from our kitchens out and doing something useful with them, composting. That is where an investment might be needed, but we can also do this at the community level without a huge investment. It just takes cooperation and another community education program.
All right, thank you. Stephen, this goes to you next.
Yeah, so trash is a different and unique opportunity, I guess. This is actually something that I felt very strongly about that the Sustainability Commission should pursue. And so that is one of their goals right now, is to look at diversion in the waste stream. And that's not only shipping things in. I've talked about the Uline catalogs that I think a lot of you have seen before. It's about a 5-page book that for some reason every once in a while I get two of in the mail. And I've never bought from them. So diverting stuff that comes in and then diverting that stuff comes out as well. There's no reason we should be paying to ship off pallets off of the island. So I think there is a lot of opportunities. The new solid waste contract coming up here soon, if I remember correctly. So that would be an opportunity for us to revise what we ship to who, because right now our waste is owned by one entity. We're getting a lot more efficiency in compaction. I know the compactor was a point of contention for a long time, but we're getting almost a third more waste shoved into every container, so that's lowering our costs of getting it out of here. But definitely would want to refer back to Sustainability Commission on this. They are the experts in this, and they've been tasked at looking at it. So anything that they bring forward would be worthy of very serious consideration.
Thank you. And just to remind listeners, you're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka. We're right in the middle of our mayoral election forum, and you can ask the candidates your questions by calling us now, 747-5879, or you can email news@kcaw.org. Rob is eagerly awaiting your calls. This next question is going to go to Stephen first. This is from a listener as well. This is from Beth. She asks, do you think more can be done by Alaska communities and municipalities to minimize the damage of state cuts to education funding? If so, what are some ideas? And this is 2 minutes.
Oh, that's a hard one. I think the municipalities have spoken in unison. Alaska Municipal League, which we are a member of, has put out resolutions to the legislature. Communities have spoken. Last time we were in Juneau for AML, it happened to be that they were hearing a bill on education, so a bunch of mayors went up on the hill and spoke in favor of straightening out the system, essentially. And we see where that gets us. We're still at one-time funding. So I believe that it needs to be fixed. I believe that this uncertainty is unsustainable. Right now, the municipality is essentially tapped out in what we can do to support our schools above and beyond the cap. We've done basically everything in our power to make sure that we have a school system that maintains a status quo. So we definitely need some more predictability and reliability from the state level. And that's going to come at the cost of other cuts, and we're going to have to figure out where those cuts come from in the state budget, because right now it doesn't exist. So I will continue to support school funding. I will continue to lobby for school funding. And at the state level through AML, we will continue to lobby for school funding, I believe. I see nothing that any municipality says, oh, no, we have enough school funding. We're good. So I think that will continue to be a pressing issue as time goes on.
Thank you. Leah, this goes to you next.
I think it's worth kind of remembering that the legislature is been pretty good about wanting to support schools. We've had probably the most resistance at the governor level, if I'm not mistaken, most recently. So I think it would definitely be a good thing to maintain the rage, as they say, and to make it very clear and to give the legislature the support they need to challenge those positions that are currently holding our teachers and our children hostage. I guess the other thing, I actually researched the remuneration packages for teachers across Alaska for 5 years. And it's interesting when you look at the contracts, what actually keeps people in a place that provides, you know, there are teachers holding out to stay in particular places, and Sitka is one of them. Sitka is a place where teachers will do what they have to stay. So I think there may be other ways that we can potentially game the system as it is, but we need to continue to be creative as well as vocal, and I think there's still some room left for that.
Thank you. All right, this question is about fishing or the fishing fleet. Of course, on our questionnaire, we've asked you about the haulout. If listeners want to see your answers to that, they can go to kcaw.org and check out that questionnaire. This question is a listener question. It's from Matt. He says, and I'm paraphrasing here a little bit, but he says, in Sitka, moorage rates increase 6% or more annually. The 85% Alaska resident commercial trollers and Alaska resident gill netters cannot afford this. There's still no local place to haul out a boat. Depending on the boat, it costs thousands in fuel alone for a round trip to Wrangell or Hoonah. The city, what, if anything, is the city prepared to do to help the Sitka commercial fisheries survive? And he suggests perhaps a reduction in moorage rates. So this will go to Leah first.
Okay, so what I do know about the situation with the harbors is that they are in quite a bit of it still in dire need of work. So there is definitely a large conversation to be had about how much money we can save and what the time frame is on survival. I would, without having looked in depth at the city's budget, suggest a conversation be had. My approach is generally that we have the resources we need to come to a reasonable, suitable solution for where we are. And having just come out of the housing summit, which achieved a great deal for us, I think that there are more opportunities for there to be large public discussions and people putting onto the table what they have to offer to come up with a solution, as well as what they know about the problem. So looking at what we can do over what particular time, but also getting to know much more detail about what it will take to keep things operating in a sustainable way. And that through talking to the people who are affected by it, as well as the broader community who will effectively be paying for it.
Thank you. Stephen, this goes to you next.
So I resoundingly agree that 6% annually increase in harbor rates is too much. During budgetary times, I've often made motions to cut that back, sometimes successfully, sometimes not successfully. I think it's important to remember that those rate increases come to us from the Port and Harbor Commission, the resident experts that we listen to on those rate increases. And they almost unanimously every time send a 6% increase to the Assembly for inclusion in the budget. And that's because they want to maintain a harbor system that looks as it does and is in as good a repair as it does. In order to long-term affect harbor rates, we really have to look at the master plan of the harbor and see if that fits where we want to go as a community. The Harbor Master Plan does a wonderful job at keeping the harbors up as they are now, in great repair compared to some other communities. And if that's not the direction we want to go, then we need to revise that. This is a good and a bad thing of the state building us harbors and then turning it over, is now that we are saddled with maintenance and repair. So we have to plan for the repair of Eliason Harbor. If that harbor disappears, there goes the fishing fleet too. So while it is expensive to continue to maintain, I'd rather have a spot for the fishermen to tie up here than not have a spot. Just as I'd rather have your toilets flush when you flush the toilet and your lights turn on when you flip the switch. So those do come at a cost, unfortunately, but the master plan, I think, is the key to unlocking any sort of rate savings. And if you have concerns about the increases, the Port and Harbor Commission would be the first stop, but always happy to talk about it.
Thank you. And this is another question about revenue and circling back to sort of the cruise tourism questions. This is from an anonymous listener who asked to remain anonymous. They said, last year the assembly used some of the extra revenue from tourism to give a small rebate to all. While this was a nice gesture, it didn't make an ongoing impact. Would you consider designating funding to something that would make an ongoing difference? And they say, for example, Swan Lake Senior Center, going beyond the planned safety improvements to enhance a community facility. Or do you think handing out a rebate is best? What ideas or thoughts do you have for this coming year? And I'll add on where extra revenue can go. And this will go to Stephen first.
So I was a supporter of the one-time rebate, but it was just that to me. It was a one-time rebate. We heard loudly from the community, what's in it for me, and we wanted to try and give back in a meaningful way to the members of the community. But that was a one-time effort for me. I don't think that needs to continue. As far as extra revenues, I think that's completely up to the community for conversations. I frequently go back to it, but it's a perfect example of when we had a little bit more revenue, a grassroots effort started to bring back the Parks and Rec program, which is now flourishing. So a group of citizens got together and they charted a course to bring back this program. And I think that's exactly what needs to happen with any of these other revenues that are right now. They're going into the infrastructure sinking fund so that we can repair roads, because those are the one things in town that really doesn't have a general fund would be our road system. And I think we've all hit a pothole or two on the way home, so we could see that's necessary. But happy to have a conversation about where extra revenue may go. If it's not roads, then what does the community want as far as programs go? Right now, I would say that recreation is doing pretty well. I think we need to focus a little bit more on housing, which has been a top concern of the community for a couple years now.
Thank you. Leah?
Okay. These kinds of revenues, which come from an industry which is boom and bust, they have highs, they have lows, and they are run by corporations who are required to deliver a dividend for their shareholders on a reasonable, reliable basis. When it becomes difficult for them to deliver that, they will not be here. And we need to plan for that. So, the money that comes from something like this, which is unreliable, is referred to as a windfall. And places like Norway actually take their petroleum revenue, and they have turned that into a trillions of worth of value for their citizens. And this is called a sovereign wealth fund. So I would suggest that we actually do something very substantial with the funds that come in rather than doing distributions necessarily. And I think the sinking fund is a good place to put it, because that is work that needs to be done that is not going to come from anywhere else at this point, and that will not result in us relying on this income for the services that we're enjoying. So that would be my answer to that. I think it needs to be managed, and I think that the community can be involved in that conversation.
And Stephen, you brought up housing. So I think I want to ask a question about housing. I did ask this question on the questionnaire, but I want to make sure, especially if listeners haven't seen your answers to this, we could talk a little bit about housing. And so this will go to Leah first. You know, do you see a need for further regulatory measures to ease Sitka's housing crisis? What tangible actions can the Assembly do to relieve some of Sitka's housing stress?
I think there are a lot of things we can do. Regulatory action can be as light-handed as requiring additional data to be collected during our assessors' activities each year. We have data from the census that tells us that we have a really, really substantial number of vacant buildings in March every year. But what we know on the ground is that these places are not available for longer than 7 or 8 months a year. And this is a different problem to needing to build. People come and say, well, we just need to release more land. When you've heard from the planning person in Sitka, she lays out a very eloquent position, which is that you can release land, but it is difficult to build on. You can find money to build, but you also need to deal with the fact that when you build these places, they are going to be very, very, very expensive. And if you don't deal with all of these very complex things at once, you are not going to be resolving the problem. So I think some of the regulatory things we can do are to actually make it a little more difficult just to sit on property, because there is a certain amount of supply and demand that is keeping housing costs for existing housing as high as they are. And that's a hard conversation, because people's houses are valued, and that is part of their wealth. And we need to recognize that a certain amount of this wealth is actually damaging to our community as a whole.
Thank you. This goes to Stephen next.
Yeah, if tourism was a hard question, housing is even harder. You know, I wish it was an issue that just Sitka was doing wrong. I wish that we could look to other communities and figure out what they were doing and solve our problem. For better or for worse, it's a nationwide issue right now. There's many, many, many communities that are going through this. Most communities in Alaska are going through this. Sitka is adding houses at a faster rate than any other community in town, and it's still not enough. And projections say that it won't be enough. So I definitely think that the next assembly needs to sit down and take a better look at it. I think it's often been... There's shinier things, there's easier things that have been tackled, and so I think it's time. I know that I've spoke with Kevin Mosier, and we want to, if both elected, want to put some effort back into housing and see what we can do. There are deed restriction programs in other communities, voluntary deed restriction programs that could help, It's a lot more complicated of an issue, unfortunately, than 2 minutes can handle, and we can come at it from all sides. Overall, I don't feel that regulation is necessarily the right way to do it. I think a free market, you should be able to sell a house to whoever you want to for whatever price the market will support. But unfortunately, that's pricing locals out of the market to where people from out of state are swooping in with higher offers and buying them. So, you know, part of it is even on us as community members to make a conscious decision to sell it to a local as opposed to someone else.
Thank you both. We have just time for maybe two more questions. I have another listener question. I think you answered a similar one at the Chamber Forum on Friday. This is from Lorraine. She asks, strictly speaking about the building only, not anything else about police, how invested are you in pursuing funding and voting for construction of a new police department building? So this will go to Stephen first.
The Assembly has been pursuing funding for this. It is one of our priorities. We've looked at options to even relocate to other chunks of land and build new buildings. and those have fallen through. So undoubtedly, this is a priority. I support John Leach in that, in his philosophy that public safety is one of the basic fundamentals that we need to support. And so going forward, a police building is going to be very important. I don't believe that the one that we have right now can be effectively rehabbed into something functional. So it's going to be a lot of money. Where that money comes from is yet to be seen, but I definitely think it's worth the effort. We can't give up on it, and we've got to continue charging forward.
Thank you. Leah?
I would really need to know a lot more about what is the issue with this building. I have not heard anyone say that this is a building that has, you know, threatens the lives of those who are in it. I need to see what of the many, many, many facilities we need to support in our, you know, in the next 10 years, how this fits into that. There's a lot of things that we need to do. What is going to be the thing which benefits the community? You can see this as saying, well, we need to support public safety. I'm not sure how that directly relates to a new building for the police department in the absence of an actual threat to life. There are a lot of people living in buildings which are in a lot worse shape than the police station.
All right. Thank you both for your answers to those listener questions. I know there are some more. We don't quite have the time. I can hear the assembly candidates coming into the building now, so we are going to switch over to the assembly forum shortly. But before we do that, I want to give you a chance to just address this final question. Why should Sitkins vote for you? And this will go to Leah first.
I think that I am running because we need to provide our community with a distinctive choice of approach to the way that we go forward in the next 10 years. Sitkins should vote for me because I have a broad experience. I have a good background in investigation and research, and I am willing to put the time in to put that at the disposal of the city. I also think that we have been doing the same thing for quite a while, and the only other thing on the table appears to be, well, let's keep doing it. There's a meme floating around on the internet that says, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results. So I think if what we have now is good enough, then you don't need my help. But if you believe that we need to do something differently to achieve a different outcome, then I am here to be a part of that.
Thank you. Stephen, this goes to you.
I'm excited about another term to maintain the stability that the Assembly has right now. I'm excited for another term to maintain the effectiveness that we have now, the efficiency that we have now, the inclusiveness and the fairness, things that I have strived for and spoken about previously. We have a highly functional assembly right now. We have an assembly where people want to join. People put their name in to run for assembly, which I'm excited about. I spoke about this previously as well. I got my start in service because there were two people running for two seats. So again, want to thank Leah for putting her name in because I believe that Sitka deserves a choice in their mayor. I also believe that Sitka is happy with the direction that we are going down right now, and that we want to see this stability continue. So that's why I'm running for mayor again, is to build on the foundation that I've laid and continue to help Sitka grow in a path that I believe is supported by the majority of Sitkins.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for joining me and taking the time to talk about some, not all. There's so much more to talk about, I'm sure, but I appreciate you taking the time tonight to talk with me about the issues. That's it for our Mayor's Forum. You are listening to Raven Radio, KCAW, Sitka. I'm going to put some music on for you, and in just a few moments, the Assembly candidates will be in the room with me. So if you have questions for Assembly candidates, now's the time to call 747-5879 or email news@kcaw.org, and we'll get as many of your questions out there as we can.